Hello and welcome to 10,000 Posts. It's your guide to having a nice time on the internet as you take your first steps in surfing the web. Devin, can you please insert an electric guitar riff into this section? Surfing the web. My name is Hussein. You can follow me at hkizvani on twitter.com, where I give lots of takes about stuff and people get mad at me. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Phoebe Roy. Phoebe, how's it going? How's stuff online going today?
It's going okay. You must never get mad at me because it hurts my feelings.
Yeah. Well, you're like sensible. You've got like a locked account, whereas I am just like a guy. I did an interview today for like this newsletter, where they like talk to people about how they experience the internet. And I realized, like, as they were asking me like all these questions, how much of a glutton for punishment I am. And how like I make active decisions in my life for people to get mad at me. And then like I lament that decision, but I still continue coming for more. And I don't know, maybe that says a lot about me. Maybe that's like a something for my therapist to unpack, or maybe it just says something about society. I'm not sure. But to answer that question, we have a guest. We have a three-peat guest.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, yeah, a three-peat guest, our LA correspondent, Miles Klee. Miles, how's it going? Welcome back to the Postpod.
Oh, it's going great. Thank you for having me. And I'm just racking up those co-host appearances until, you know, I get that third mic. Feels good.
Yeah. we'll send you, when our Patreon like grows a little bit, we'll send you like a nice little one, and you can you can be the third mic. I was going to ask you before we start, have people been mad at you online recently, and if so, for what?
No, you know what? I've been it's been smooth sailing actually for a little while.
Wow.
Yeah, steering clear of controversy. I mean, we just got a cat, and so I posted the cat.
Okay.
And that immediately just, no one will ever be mad at you again if you just post cats. This is what I'm finding out.
Right, hang on. I'm looking up Miles's cat. Looking up Miles's cat.
you know those tweets that are just like, I'm feeling really bad today. Please post pictures of your cat.
Oh, look at this little precious angel. It's a little witch's cat.
Yeah, she's a little black cat.
I love the cat.
Yeah, welcome to 10,000 Posts, where we talk about Miles's cat. And
I'm pivoting to, well, my sister has a famous dog on Instagram, so I think I'm just gonna figure out all her hacks, and I'm just gonna have a famous cat that makes money for me, and I won't have to work.
One of the unwritten rules of online is that cats are always like good content, but like the original content, I think they're like the only kind of content that like keeps getting regenerated, but in like better ways. Mm-hmm. So like what you have done is basically just like you've expanded your like posting potential, and I'm really happy for you for that.
Thank you.
Diversifying your posts portfolio. That's right. Like, yeah, sometimes you've got to go vintage.
I've ascended through every plane of posting until I got back to the beginning.
Yeah, sometimes you just need to go old school. I'm very excited for like the future of Miles posting, where no one can get mad at him because like they're too enamored by his beautiful cat. And we'll include a picture in the show notes for people who want to see.
It's very biblical, I think, that like there's this sort of idea that everything. Is everything in your life is your struggle to return to paradise and to return to the Lord, and everything in posting is the long grinding struggle to return to cat posting.
Yeah.
This is what I think. This is my theory.
I genuinely think that this is like an interesting thread to follow, perhaps in like future episodes, which is just like, I do genuinely think that like there are some aspects of online culture that just like get like from the past, but like just keep getting regenerated. And I think what we're going to see, especially like as like Facebook kind of pivots like metaverse stuff, is really just like a reset of like old. And like there are even kind of impulses of it right now where we talk about like anonymity and like smaller social media and kind of more personalized social media and everything. But really what we're talking about is just like we're trying to replicate like a very old model of like when we thought the internet was good. And I think that's going to bring with it like its own set of problems, like generational problems in particular. But that we should probably talk about like on another episode, maybe with Miles. Maybe we should do another one when Miles comes on once again. But look, we have a list of stuff to talk about, including something that you guys both have to explain to me because I don't read books anymore. I just read posts now. So you have to explain a lot of stuff to me. But before we go into book posting, we're going to talk about one of the highest forms of art in our current society, which is video games. Someone sent me a few people sent us a tweet over the last week to talk about. I think that like it's something that I've been thinking about a bunch and like not really sure what this guy is talking about, but I'm going to read it out and I'm going to see what you guys think. So this is from a guy called Bronze Swords. His username is Conrad Golden, at least at the time. He describes himself as a classical liberal, center-left, pro-beauty, pro-freedom, anti-bullying, anti-feminism, SJW.
A lot of medals in his name.
Yeah. Yeah. But it comes from a big family of a gaming aristocracy, I assume.
Yeah.
So this is what Conrad Golden says. He said it on October 16th, 2021. He says, I was thinking about why so many in the radical left participate in, quote, speedrunning. The reason is the left's lack of work ethic. Go fast rather than do it right. And in a Petersonian sense, to elevate alternative sexual archetypes in the marketplace, brackets, fastest Mario, 1 out of 14. Now look, there are like, I feel like there are parts of this thread that do get like really weird, like much weirder as you go on, but I'm just going to like, what are your guys' opinions just of that original tweet? What things stick out to you? What is this guy saying? Like, I don't understand.
You know, it's just ticking so many boxes too. Like, I don't know what it means anymore when you plan the number of tweets you're going to do in your thread. It just doesn't seem, that alone makes it feel like a joke that's never been necessary.
Yeah.
Using the word Petersonian, I mean, that's incredible level up in terms of Peterson posting.
It's my favorite museum in Toronto.
Oh my gosh. I mean, just turning him into an adjective is really chef's kiss. I think that might be the underrated part of this tweet.
Yeah, it also like doesn't make sense because I don't think that I was looking up like what does Jordan Peterson think of video games, and he doesn't really have a lot of opinions of them, but the ones that he does have are just like video games are a waste of time and they like there used to be video games that used to kind of like promote the hero's journey archetype, but they're now all woke and they're all like emasculating, so you shouldn't play them anyway, go out and live your life. Like he has like a real contempt for video games and gamers, but like just seems to be ignored throughout this entire thread.
So Peterson should actually want people to speed run because that wastes less time.
Right, yeah. Phoebe, as the resident gamer on this pod, what do you think of this tweet?
This is really interesting to me because we talked about this a little bit in the last episode as well, because this is apparently now the Peterson Committee Defense Pod. I don't know why, I don't know how that happened, but, you know, fine. that Peterson has got himself into, Dr. Peterson, let's be respectful, has got himself into this weird situation where everything which he hates and denigrates and thinks that is like an example of postmodern decadence and decay, he is also obliged to think is important and good. Because directly because of the specific nature and profile of his fans. So Dr. P can't say publicly that playing video games isn't a horrific waste of your time. When you could be, you know, making yourself the best man you could be, and you could be, you know, tidying your room and petting a cat. We're back to the cat posting.
Yeah, he knows he's got posters impulse.
So, and so that leads to this interesting, like, kind of fantasy fictive world where people have to kind of make up a Petersonian theory of gaming.
Yeah,
and I think that's and it's very very similar. It's very similar to the fictive world that Harry Potter fans built around Rowling before the Great Fall, And it's an interesting aspect of contemporary stand-up where you're obliged to behave as if writers, journalists, etc., who have a kind of patina of celebrity to them, are functionally the same as sort of older style traditional celebrities. So you can make up whatever you want to make up about what they think, what they feel, what they say. But unfortunately, because these are writers, what they think about stuff is available in a solid material form. And yeah. I find that very funny. Just on that one tweet in the thread, the whole thing is enjoyably bonkers. I think it's charming. I think we found a new new friend of the show. Quite honestly,
I just want to emphasize that like this tweet got quote tweeted 6,057 times.
That's someone who understands the platform.
Yeah. Finger on the pulse.
Yeah, though, yeah. That's like, I feel like that's almost like touching Eric Garland numbers. It doesn't quite hit like the original form of like Fred posting, of insane Fred posting. But like, I think it's come closer than a lot that we've spoken about on this show since we started.
It's really wonderful that it just begins with like a totally baseless connection to that the radical left is doing speed running. Like that's very much a like source for this claim type.
Trust me, bro. Yeah, just trust me.
But he's already telling you he's going to do 14 tweets on it. You don't even have time to question the first thing he just takes as given. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No. Right. It's real performance art, particularly to elevate alternative sexual archetypes in the marketplace. Fastest Mario, and then while you're digesting that, he's already gone on to the next post. While you're like, wait, come back, Conrad Goldwyn. What does
he's
that mean?
Twitter.
He's speed running Twitter. It's like it is a glorious display of meta analysis. Like it's incredible.
Yeah,
incredible.
That's actually quite. I didn't think about it like that, but yeah, basically you're right. Like so, okay, like. I was trying to figure out what he meant by all these things. I've been trying to spend like a week trying to work this out, right? So I don't know much about like video gaming, but a friend of mine like who does play video games basically said that like speedrunning is this kind of, you know, it's become like a popular format for like YouTube and Twitch, right? As a way of basically like you complete certain levels of a game where you complete a video game in like the fastest time possible. And like sometimes like, you know, gamers will like the gamers who are doing speedrunning will add like their own kind of objectives and missions. Sometimes they'll like play on easy mode as a way of just like speedrunning through it fastest. But basically it's just like an alternate way to play the game that designers didn't necessarily like have in mind, but it's not necessarily like an aberration to the game. But what like Conrad Golden seems to basically be saying is that speed, like the reason why he links it to the radical left is I think because he believes that gaming is a form of labor. And that if you think about it in that way, speedrunning is just a way of like, but in terms of like making the gaming process efficient, like prevents it from being a like engaging in like an actual kind of physical labor. I'm getting confused even saying this, but I think like one of the things that he's trying to say is that like the radical leftist gamers are lazy and that's why they prefer speedrunning. And he's really angry that like speedrunning is like a really popular format for playing video games rather than like whatever other ways you play it. And then again, like this is just like what can like confuses me because I think that like speedrunning has kind of always been a thing. Like people have always sort of done this in some capacity, especially when like they're bored of playing like one version of a game and they decide to like alter it themselves. I don't know, like I used to do that sometimes with like Crash Bandicoot. Or at least like other video game, like other PlayStation 1 games that I used to have. I don't know, like none of this seems very new. And the radical left association feels like something that like comes out of like the people who still insist that Gamergate is happening.
Yeah, leftist gamers want a 4-day weekend.
That's right. That's That's right. They want to spend the rest of the 3 days modifying their avatars, which is like the other thing too. Then he sort of gets angry about like, I think modification. So this is where like this fastest Mario comes in. So like halfway through the thread, he talks about like sexual archetype models. So he says, if you have any passing familiarity with Jordan Peterson's broader oeuvre of Jungian psychology, then you already know where I'm going with this. However, I will say more for the uninitiated. 8 out of 14. And then he goes on. Thanks, Conrad. So then he talks about like the archetypal son, which continually reconstructs defined territory as a consequence of the assimilation of unknown, as a consequence of incestuous, that is sexual, read creative, union with the great mother, 9 out of 14. It just kind of completely goes off the rails. And then at some point at the 11th thread of, now he's changed it not to 14, but to 15. Like, so like halfway through, he changes it to like, yeah, there's now going to be 15 tweets of this. I don't give a fuck. He talks about Elon Musk and he says the obvious aren't, this is in relation to what he calls sexuality and creativity in video gaming in the sexual marketplace, which archetypes are simultaneously deemed the most creative and most highest. The answer is obviously Elon Musk. Given that we have evolved and each of us, we do have an evolutionary purpose or cause in capitals. What archetype is a speedrunner engaged in? Who is accomplishing nothing new? It kind of just like goes completely off the rails at this point. And I'm not even sure he really knows what he's saying. Like at some point he kind of says that like speedrunners aren't creative. They're just people who like are NP, like non-playable characters who just like complete like games really fast. Whereas actual real gamers contribute new stuff. But like, he doesn't actually explain what that stuff is. And then the final tweet is just like, oh, I triggered the leftists. I will clarify what I said. And then he just like kind of corrects typos. So I felt that like reading this thread again, it would make more sense, but it doesn't. There's this very sort of like tenuous archetype, but it's also, to me, it kind of encapsulates the perfect illustration of like Poster's brain, which is that like you kind of have these disparate ideas that you're like desperately trying to kind of connect together, and you're sort of entirely convinced that like your worldview like makes sense based on like your immersion in like a digital environment, and then when you try to explain it to someone, it just doesn't make any sense and it comes across as like really, really unhinged. And I don't know what you think about that, and whether that's like sort of universal to like if you try to explain like Twitter beef, for example, or like Miles, when you're like writing like stuff about online culture, like does it like feel like just insane trying to explain like what's actually going on and why it's like relevant to people?
Yeah, no, I think it's usually much more explicable than this is. But if I were to try to sum this up, I feel that he really has hit on like 8 or 9 things that are kind of guaranteed engagement, right? He's got Peterson, he's got Mario, he's got gaming, he's got Elon Musk, and it doesn't totally matter like how he, as you say, like how he's fitting all those pieces together, because he's really struggling, I think, to get whatever idea is in his head out there. But you can just say, you know, obviously Elon Musk is great, and it's like, okay, that's going to get you on the, you know, the Twitter's new little like topics tab that just shows you like, Even if someone is like making fun of SpaceX, they're like, aha, this SpaceX thing blew up. It'll like show up in the topics tab.
Yeah.
All these tweets feel like they are sort of positioned for that, or the whole thread feels that way. Mm-hmm. And then for Elon Musk, it's like, I mean, and the sexual archetype thing is, I think, what's really baffling. It's like, I can kind of connect almost everything in here except for the sex stuff. And I guess that's because that's what Jordan Peterson cares about, is like sexual dominance hierarchies. But it's really interesting just to say that Elon Musk is the opposite, because Elon Musk is the guy who, like, instead of, you know, he's claiming to have built a robot, but it's just a guy in a suit. You know, that's like, that is really cheating and just, rushing to the end point without doing any of the work. So. Yeah. Strangely, a much better example than the one he's trying to come up with here.
I think what's worth pointing out here is, instead of like thinking about it in terms of, oh, like we're trying to kind of deconstruct posting beef, which like quite honestly would make a really uninteresting and stupid show, quite honestly, I think. I think what we have to remember is that the platforms themselves or the people who run the platforms didn't really take into account the way that people would try to kind of shape the norms of the platforms for themselves, or the way that specific, because they were never, particularly Twitter, has resisted any attempt to say what they actually are. And I'm sure that part of this is for legal reasons, because if they describe themselves as a publisher, then they are then technically responsible for what they publish. And if they are permitting hate speech, for example, then they are presumably legally liable for that. So they sort of say that it's a kind of a blogging platform, but it's not strictly a blogging platform. They sort of say it's for kind of conversations and community building, but it's not really that, because number one, it doesn't have any kind of instant message facility, which I think is like a core cornerstone of anything which claims to be primarily for communication. But I don't think that they quite predicted the like wheel within a wheel of people working out how to game their posting so that it looks like an organic post, but it's actually, if you like Miles just did, if you're going to break it down, you can see every point at which it's like calibrated to drive maximum engagement.
Yeah,
but it's not driving maximum engagement in a way that the platform kind of acknowledges and knows about, and it's also both obscure and also recognizable, like at the same time. It's quite head spinning. I still would love to know what Fastest Mario is as a sexual archetype.
No, yeah,
and it is not in there.
He never describes the sexual mod. So this is why I kind of think that what he's actually talking about is just like mods in general, right? So like, in gaming culture, there is kind of, or like in certain, like, I'm not going to say that I like understand gaming culture, but there is a certain kind of like section of gamers who really don't like modded characters, especially because like so many people who like mod characters like come from like LGBTQ+ like communities, right? So because everything is a culture war, like those kind of two things, especially around like trans issues, like that's kind of, you know, that's sort of like concentrated in like modding spheres for like whatever reason. I'm sorry, like I haven't like explained it in full detail. I think if I do, I might like have like, you know, lose my mind. And also crucially, I don't want to get anything wrong. But like, this is sort of where that aspect of like culture war in gaming circles is. And this is where I was kind of thinking about, okay, is this sort of like extending that to basically saying that any type of modding of like a video game character is like an aberration? And is that why we sort of see, for example, like when like the Final Fantasy VII like rebuild comes out for PlayStation 4, that like so many people are mad, but like Square Enix has like made the bust size smaller, or they get really mad when like Lara Croft's boobs aren't pointy and stuff, right? They view that as like woke modding.
Meddling with God's perfect creation,
right? Exactly. Well, this is the other thing too, right? Because if we're going back to Peterson and like the whole Petersonian thing, what he was basically trying to argue was the idea that like in these virtual worlds, like game developers, like, are they basically are like the gods of these worlds, and that by modding the characters, you're basically like undoing like God's intentions. So in that way, like it kind of, you know, these are kind of like implanting like very religious, I don't want to say religious in kind of a neutral sense, but these sort of like religiously inspired like critiques on like body modification generally, but it's implied to like video game. And like the reason why it's so absurd, because it, you know, it's just like, you know, why are you getting this mad about like a virtual gaming platform, right? But like, I think this is how Conrad Golden actually sees it. It's like these kind of, you know, these like leftists who like view nothing as sacred, who view like, you know, who don't believe in God at all, like, you know, are just kind of godless beings. They are implanting their morality into video game culture, and I won't stand it anymore. And I will, you know, and the existence of a Fastest Mario is an affront to God himself. do you know what I mean? I'm like, I feel like I'm going insane yes. explaining it, but I think genuinely that's what he means by this.
Yeah, these guys would be fine if they would just go see a Ryan Reynolds movie called Free Guy. Out no. in theaters. It covers all of this.
We're very like anti Free Guy pod. I haven't seen Free Guy, but I know that whenever Phoebe's mentioned it, she's just gotten really mad about it. So.
Yeah, that's now you know how Conrad Golden feels. Free Guy is disrupt. Yeah, he's a disruption. It's wrong.
That's right. I can't wait to see Free Guy. I feel like once I see it, I'm just not going to shut up about it, and then like that's going to be the end of this show. Do we have any more? Do we have any last thoughts on Conrad Golden, or shall we move to the meat and potatoes?
I can't wait to see what he does next.
Like, yeah, just keep an eye on this guy. He's going far. Like, honestly, I don't know if I've got anything to add to the idea of of God in his heaven crying because his creations have speed run Mario. I don't. There's anything that we can really add. Anything that we can really add.
God should be angrier that Chris Pratt is going to be Mario. That's worse.
Yeah. Shit. I forgot about this. Yeah. Yeah.
I think this is good. Actually, I think he'll. I think he'll do a good job.
Yeah. He'll be slow Mario. That's.
Oh. Okay. Okay.
You need a Mario to like balance out each other, right? So like you need a slow Mario and a fast Mario. You need like a sexy Wario. Yeah, you need like these characters need to balance each other out in order
I hope Pratt gains like 150 pounds.
I would, or like you know that movie that Jared Leto's in, where he like
House of Gucci,
where he's like wearing like so much like prosthetics in order to kind of portray like an overweight Italian man, and like there's absolutely no reason for him to do this. Like there are so you could have just kind of gotten an Italian actor to play this guy, but like I feel like Jared Leto was so insistent that he wanted to wear the bodysuit, and that's how he sort of like ended up in this role. He's so great.
You know, never says in any of the literature that Mario is Italian. Where does it say it?
Oh, is this like a Humpty Dumpty scenario where it's like no one ever claimed that Humpty Dumpty was like...
Where is Mario ever described as Italian? He could have like one Italian grandparent and still be called Mario. Or like he could be like Mario Lopez, who to my knowledge is not Italian.
Hmm. Yeah. Or is he like a Japanese guy, like LARPing as an Italian? That like brings out its own kind of complications.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Definitely appropriation, yeah.
Yeah, I just like typed in Google right now, and like the first article is like, shockingly, Super Mario is not Italian, he's Japanese. says a lot. Okay, all right, let's talk about like someone slightly less confusing, but by no means like not confusing at all. I have not read any Joyce Carol Oates books, unfortunately, so you guys are both gonna have to like explain the backstory of this to me. But basically, like Joyce Carol Oates has kind of been like this figure that has come up on this pod in passing every so often. The tweet that I remember of Joyce Carol Oates is the disgusting keyboard. that like lives rent free in my head. It was like
one of the only ones she's deleted.
Oh, did she delete it? Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. So I kind of found a copy of it. I assume that she kind of kept it up because she keeps so much stuff up. But I feel like she's done a bunch of weird posts recently. I can't make sense of it. So like the most recent one, and Miles, like you wrote an article about this and we're going to talk about like this is going to be like the center of this section. She did a post on October 1st where she walked past a house full of like Halloween decorations of like skeletons. And you know, these are just like standard Halloween decorations, nothing like amazing to like write home about. You know, maybe too many skeletons is probably the only critique I have. Joyce Carol Oates quote tweeted this on October the 1st, and she says, "You can always recognize a place in which no one is feeling much or any grief for a lost loved one and death or dying. Everyone you love is decomposing to bones is just a joke." Yeah, this is a classic. This is a classic Joyce Carol Oates tweet. There was also another one that she did on October the 6th where she talked about pronouns. So she said, "They will not become part of a general usage, not for political reasons, but because the word would be, because there would be no pronoun to distinguish between a singular subject, quote they, and a plural subject, quote they. Language seeks to communicate with clarity, not to obfuscate. That is its purpose. Yeah, so like Miles, as you published this piece like fairly recently, as someone like me who does not really know much about Joyce Carol Oates except for like a very, except knowing that she's a famous writer and also just a very weird poster, how would you kind of like describe what is going on?
Yeah, okay, so there's like a few things to know. One is that she's incredibly prolific. So she's written close to 60 books, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
And she has 83, but that's still just an insane output. And it's kind of always mentioned in every review of her. And she gets kind of annoyed about it, that people are pointing out how productive she is. And I think there's a real poster's connection there. Like, she can't turn it off. She doesn't turn it off, ever. And she gets annoyed when people are like, wow, she sure writes a lot. So she's been married twice and widowed twice. And so her second husband died 2 years ago. And I think that's some of the source of the skeleton, the hating the skeletons and being reminded of people you love dying. But, you know, there's also definitely a sense of like loneliness in her posting because, you know, she really usually describes herself as like an elderly woman who lives with cats. And yeah. You know, Twitter is kind of a connection to the world with her. I'm sure through the pandemic, especially she was posting pretty hard. But the posts go back a long time, and I think she doesn't quite think about the range or impact or influence she has. Mm-mm. You know, she's got over 200,000 followers, but she, you know, in her mind, she's just a little old lady. With her cats typing on her computer and and she has a real just asking questions mentality, I would say.
Yeah.
So some of her more offensive tweets are just kind of like, what do people, you know, what do people think about that? You know, like just putting something out there that's kind of really bad. I would say the stuff that had more of a racist tinge was a few years ago. She kind of stays away from that now. And to her credit, I think she was really apologetic about the they thing, which so this is the weird part about her pronouns beef, which is that she's not really arguing from like a bioessentialist view, right? Like it's not really the turfy point of view. She's just I'm just thinking about language. How does language work? And it's interesting that she's wrong, even on those merits.
Yeah.
But you know, she did come back and say, "Oh, I'm really supportive of transgender people and all this." She's not really like, there's only men and women and you can't change and anything like that. She just has this kind of like naivete sometimes about how things are going to be interpreted. And it's what I said in the piece is just she's just thinking out loud. She just doesn't really have like the filter. And she just wants, to know what people are thinking. She wants to have a discussion. And she seems to think that it can always be like a kind of civil and like rational discussion. And I don't know what her experience of Twitter is, but it's never been that way. So interesting that she keeps trying. Hmm.
She's very optimistic in that regard,
yeah.
I think. And what JCO does is that, how JCO conceives of social media is it's her scribble pad. So she is like, obviously we're not gonna call her a prolific writer because she hates it, and but if you are a very, very prolific writer, you want a scribble pad to write your ideas, to make observations, to write down stuff that you overhear people talking about on the bus, whatever. And you imagine what someone who was born in the time that she was born. I mean, I know it's easy to forget this, but if you are in your 80s, just thinking about the difference in the capacity, in like the kind of technological capacity of the contemporary era compared to how it was when you were a child, I think that some of the reason that people of her generation and maybe the generation below who've been driven out of their minds by posting is that the human brain is just not equipped for that level of forward progress. And I think if you've grown up with these capacities, or certainly with like the germs and the beginnings of these capacities, you have no idea what that might do to what that might do to the kind of conception of the possibilities and capacities of a networked world. And so if you present a hugely prolific writer with not just the option to have a scribble pad like on her phone, but also one with a kind of interactive capability built in, and one which could lead to discussions and interesting commentary, which could lead to further scribbly notes. So I think that's the source behind the fact that she keeps trying, or not even that she keeps trying. I don't think that she is particularly off-put by the shape, tone, and tenor of posting. I think she likes it. I think she's tough as hell. That's what I think. I think that there are some people who just love this shit, and I think that there are some people who get really kind of terrorized and sensitized by feedback of any kind, and even kind of mildly critical feedback, but definitely kind of hostile feedback. And I don't think she does. I think she loves it, and I think it makes her stronger. And I think that can be that's the only possible reason behind the picture of the necrotic foot, or like when she makes jokes that people think that she's just being elderly. Like, she's actually got a very vicious and very sharp sense of humor, I think.
Oh, she's funny. Yeah.
Yeah, she's funny as hell. And I think that she's got a very, very, very thick skin. And she doesn't care. She's uncancellable. She's uncancellable because she doesn't care. She is the Alice Caldwell Kelly of prolific short fiction.
Well, look, I hope Alice like agrees with that.
You can lift that out if you like.
Or you can keep it. You know, maybe it's right. One thing I was going to say was that, like, what it seems to me, but like based on like reading your piece, Miles, is that also Joyce Carol Oates like won't play the kind of game that a lot of authors in her sort of like, I don't want to say like her caliber, but like maybe kind of with her reputation often do. We kind of saw that a bit with like Margaret Atwood. We've definitely seen that with like J.K. Rowling. There's like a few others as well, where like when they sort of get kickback for their tweets, they will kind of like double down, or they will kind of play the cancel culture like playbook, and like you sort of know where the trajectory sort of goes from there. And it feels like part of like Joyce Carol Oates's indestructibility is the fact that like I don't think she actually knows how to play, or like maybe she does, but she just doesn't want to do it, right? So like you point out that you point out that like instead of kind of like doubling down, she kind of like asks questions, and she's like very reflective over the stuff that she posts. And like while she's not necessarily like apologetic, or you know, and often she'll like justify why she'll like why what she said was like okay, she won't kind of like she won't kind of like frame herself as a victim, and she won't kind of abide by the playbook. And I wondered whether like why that is, whether there's kind of like hints of that in like the stuff that she's written. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think she's always going to go her own way. There's a purity of motive. She can't be dragged. She really can't be dragged into discourse, as you point out. She kind of creates the discourse herself instead. Because she's usually just coming out of left field. I mean, I think of the tweet where she was asking about ISIS.
Yeah, so I'll read that out.
Yeah,
I'll say, she says, "All we hear of ISIS is puritanical and punitive. Is there nothing celebratory or joyous, or is query naive?"
And that's just so good. I mean,
it's so good.
Even just putting... she's the query naive. I mean, she knows. She knows. Like, there's no way. Like, it's just kind of, it's almost like a borscht belt joke. It's like, wow, all you ever hear about ISIS is just this horrible stuff. It's like, don't they ever have any fun? You know, like, that's just genius. And I think she, you know, because of her stature, actually, and she is kind of this giant of this, like, realism, this mode of realism that was, you know, big from the 60s on. You know, she was writing at the same time as, like, John Updike and Cheever and all those guys. And she now has this incredible authority to, I mean, some of my writer friends and I really love this. She did a tweet just trashing autofiction, like the recent trend of autofiction. That was so good. It was so good. She called those novels wan little husks, which is better than anything I've read in like a review of any of those books, like just without, you know, basically without even trying. And so, yeah, she has this incredible ability to just swoop in out of nowhere. And yeah, she's not stuck on a topic. You know, I think Atwood and J.K. Rowling got into this turf business, and it's like, there's really no, you know, it's really a cul-de-sac. There's no way out of that because they keep posting it. And yeah, Joyce isn't posting like, oh, we can't say woman anymore. She's literally just like, oh, would it be, what does the word they really mean? You know, she's on a deeper level.
It feels like it's these kind of like very mundane observations that you often kind of see from just like ordinary people who aren't necessarily like clued up on like online discourse to the point where they kind of know how to navigate it, but they can kind of recognize it, right? So it's kind of like, these aren't kind of like mundane posts in the way that like you have some kind of posters on Twitter and Facebook and stuff, but will still kind of like talk about the food that they've made or like what their kids have done and stuff like that. She kind of recognizes the general themes of the discourse, but she either like refuses to kind of go too deep into them as to like lose herself, but at the same time, like writing about it in a very mundane way is sort of like signaling to people who are way more invested in posting culture than she is, like something about herself that she's also like not defining. And I want, like, just coming into this, I was sort of thinking like, I wonder whether it's because she just hasn't like defined herself in like as clear a way as like your J.K. Rowling's and like, I guess your Margaret Atwood's now.
She's not taking an identifiable side. And I think that's what makes the post so funny and bewildering, because you're like, you don't really know where she's arguing from. I mean, I had posted a copy of the Tolstoy novella, the Kreutzer Sonata, which is famously kind of a misogynist book. And she quote tweeted me. I don't know how she found it. She doesn't follow me. This is deleted now, sadly. I don't know if she had an alert for Tolstoy. That would be amazing. But she said, she quote tweeted and basically said Tolstoy would get caught up in Me Too for this book, which is an incredible, I mean, and there's no real like judgment attached to that. It's like, would Tolstoy deserve to get Me Too'd? Is Me Too going too far because it's coming for Tolstoy? Like, you don't really get which side she's arguing from in that. She's just saying,
I got no idea. Like, is she saying, and quite right too, or is she saying this exposes like the poverty of the Me Too movement? No. Like, what is she saying?
She said deservedly so.
Yeah, but it's kind of like a deservedly so, where it's like, Joyce, like, do you really mean it? Like, even that's kind of really non-committal. And I think that like what's so interesting about her is just that she is so non-committal to the frivolities of posting at a time when like authors take posting so seriously. She's kind of like this outlier and this one that is like so frustrating to kind of deal with, and that's what makes her post so endearing and just so intriguing.
I mean, what, like, so I was like thinking a little bit about this, and like part of what is interesting about Joyce Carol Oates in terms of her specific context in which she became an author is she was quite unusual at the time, because she's from a working class family, and she went to a quite good American college. So she's just, yeah, she was a prodigy, and she wrote. Her first novel she wrote when she was 26. And in the sort of context of kind of Updike and Cheever, like, that's a very peculiar literary environment to find yourself in. So presumably, as far as she's concerned, like, what can a bunch of like donuts on Twitter like ever say to her? Like, like, if she's sort of, you know, she carved out a successful literary career in, frankly, not, I mean, not like, not like the, I'm not saying like the worst circumstances, but like certainly, like, there were certainly like barriers to entry. And she is, and I think that with the autofiction post, which, by the way, it's just so good. It's so good. It's so good. It's, she's like a kind, she's like a kind of like kind of mischievous kind of like witch fairy who just like dances around publishing, saying what other people are not allowed to say, because there's absolutely no way that she's ever going to receive any kind of opprobrium or any kind of consequences for it. And like, and people read this as like her being kind of hostile to young female, like young primarily female authors. And I don't think that's what it was at all. I think that she is hostile to the necessity of being a marketable figure that exists now in fiction publishing, and particularly for women, and this requirement of being kind of personable and agreeable, and everything has to have four pages of acknowledgements. And she's not interested in that. She's interested in being the old style of writer who is difficult and cantankerous and says what they think and thinks out loud and uses a very, 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 very public note-taking facility, and will not be apologizing or showing any particular kind of regret for that. And also, she is not interested in the present situation of cultural engagement, where there is no sense of critical discipline anymore. And there can't be, because for a number of reasons, there are very, very few real jobs in criticism anymore. So there are sort of one or two kind of staff jobs which are kind of occupied by people who can do and say exactly what they want, and nothing will ever happen to them. And then everything else, as we've observed, is done by people doing kind of sort of relatively kind of precaritized freelance work. And again, just to avoid any misunderstanding, I am not saying that being a freelance cultural critic or book reviewer is the most precaritized and the most awful job that you can possibly do. Of course I'm not saying that. However, because it's not, because there's no career ladder to it anymore. The only way that you are ever going to get to a point where you are being actively sought out and commissioned for your critical reviews and your critical engagement is if you make yourself a name. And the way you make yourself a name is by writing opinion pieces, because critical engagement, particularly by women, is treated with profound hostility. And particularly women who want to engage critically with the work of other women, because for some reason it still seems to be sort of perfectly normal to say, oh, well, you're just jealous. If you're so smart, why don't you write your own book? If you're so smart, why don't you do it? And that is because there is no critical, there are no kind of siloing of kind of critical disciplines anymore. There's no real training to either to engage with or to write critical work, cultural critical work. So no one knows how to do it, and no one knows how to read it. And then these people who are being paid, you know, £100 for a piece, are also in the main trying to make it as authors as well. So everyone knows each other socially. So there's actually kind of a limit to how critically and how seriously you can engage with anything. And that's just a situation now, because there's no sort of mid-level staff job. You're either at Harper's or you're having to write opinion pieces. Like those are the two options. And Joyce Carol Oates is not only was able to be a writer before all this and before the blurring of the boundaries between writer and influencer, but she also has been able to reject this necessity for not treating cultural work seriously and not engaging with it critically for fear of being thought to not be sort of quite nice enough, because she doesn't care about that because she's Joyce Carol Oates. That was quite long. I appreciate that, but it's something which is of interest to me.
No, I think you're completely right about all of that, and it's interesting. Like, this is stuff that we'll probably talk about when we finally get to the episode on like what is criticism, which I think will be a very fun one. But I think it is a good point where it's just like Joyce Carol Oates is one of the few kind of working authors that has had this kind of like, I don't want to kind of call it like luxury, but has kind of had this ability to not have to kind of like make her name online or having to like prove her kind of worth online, which I think like a lot of like authors, even those who are kind of like sort of established, there is like a lot of pressure on anyone kind of writing to do that and to engage in a particular way online and to kind of like recognize particular aspects of like online interaction, relations, except whatever you want to call it, in order to kind of like climb up basically a non-existent ladder that does sort of exist, but it's not, you know, not really like linear or even kind of visible. Joyce Carol Oates like doesn't have to navigate that. And so she kind of like is in this different position when it comes to social media, where it's like, okay, to an extent, every author kind of has to either engage with it or like has to make a decision as to like how they're going to interact with it. And what she, I think, does really well is that like she doesn't go to the extreme where she gets someone to do her posts for her, but at the same time she also doesn't like lose herself to the posts, which is like what some of her contemporaries have done. I think she's like struck this really like balance that's right for her, in which like she doesn't really ever get into trouble despite kind of posting spicy tweets sometimes. She kind of like gets the benefit of the doubt quite a lot, I think, based on either this presumption of naivety or just the fact that she doesn't really like engage with people like in a really hyper personalized way. And then, as like Miles mentions throughout the piece, like the way that she like interacts with her critics is actually one of like quite at least kind of like deepish inquiry. Like, she doesn't like go out to insult them, she doesn't go out to kind of like position herself against other people. I think she does like enough of kind of like quite spicy tweets, but also just like really absurd ones. Like, one thing I was looking at while you were talking was her Jurassic Park tweet, where she like quote tweets a picture of Steven Spielberg behind like a Jurassic Park dinosaur prop, and basically calls it like, you know, disgusting. I'm not sure exactly what she says, but I think she kind of mistook the dinosaur for a cow, which like, I agree, like dinosaurs were never real. They were big cows, and thank you, Joyce Carol Oates, for like noticing that.
I think she's joking.
She was. She said she was joking about that.
Definitely joking.
Maybe it's that. Maybe it's also just like some of her tweets kind of give off this, you know, she can kind of claim plausible deniability for a lot of them. I don't know. Maybe like she's so good that like even she can kind of fool like even the most like seasoned posters like myself, encountering it for the first time, being like, I genuinely don't know if you're like taking the piss or not. And actually, like, those tend to be really good posts, like ones where you just don't know how to place them, don't know how to place her. She's great. She's a good poster, man. She's like really, really good. And I think that like she knows what, like, talking about her is like she kind of knows what she's doing, but crucially, she gives off the impression that she doesn't. And I think that's what infuriates people who are like way too self-aware on these platforms.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's beating them at their own game. I think it's the inverse of like what a guy like Jonathan Franzen does, where he just talks about how Twitter is a waste of time and he'd never be on it and any serious writer can't be on it. But Joyce has proven him wrong every single day. She's going out there doing it for the love of the game. And she's not afraid to get her hands dirty.
Yeah. While Jonathan Franzen goes and watches birds, Joyce Carol Oates like rips it on the bird app, and I appreciate, and like we should respect her for that.
And you know what? She always, you mentioned the keyboard picture, but of course she was posting a picture of her cat, and that's what it always comes back to.
Oh, She
posts her cats, and she talks to other people about their cats. She retweets other people's cats. So she has a baseline that's just, unshakable.
Can we talk about the keyboard just for a second, please? Because like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like we should close on that point, because it's like, okay, so I'm looking at the keyboard picture right now. You're right. It is a picture of the cat who's like climbed up on a desk, and the keyboard was very much like an afterthought, as well as the fact that like she posts a picture where it's clear enough that you can see other people, like see the people that she's emailing. Another great post from Joyce Carol Oates. But like this keyboard, which has just like horrified me for years, or at least like when she posted it in 2019, like, there's so much gunk in the middle of like the kind of middle of the keyboard that I think some of the keys have sort of like been dislodged from their like clips.
Uh-huh. Well, is it like a mat? Is it one of those mats you put over a keyboard? You know what I'm talking about?
It's like a plastic. There's like a plastic kind of sheet that you put over the keyboard. You're right, but it feels as if there's like gunk under the sheets, which is sort of why it's lifting it up.
Yeah, it looks like it's been like buckled.
There's no sense in which you can imagine someone typing on it, but then that's just like it is a crazy insight into her post itself. Oh, she's typing her post on this keyboard.
She has gamer energy. Like this is like a gamer keyboard setup, right? Like this is the accumulation of like years worth of snacks, but her cat is probably like having a little taste of, and that's why like the cat's on the table.
Oh, yeah, I think maybe the mat is to protect the keys from getting gunk and cat hair in them and stuff, but instead that stuff just gets into the mat, and then the mat becomes disgusting.
Yeah, all the keyboard had so much gunk in it that she thought putting the mat over it would just kind of be a better option than cleaning the keyboard, which, like, fair enough, I suppose. I don't know. I mean, like, look, she's a really good and, like, talented, like, and, like, not even, I don't even, like, those are kind of, like, words to undersell her. Like, she's, like, a seminal writer, right? Like, I have no right to kind of, like, tell her how to write her books, or, like, what kind of, like, etiquette she should keep in her house. She can do what she wants, and, like, I just gotta respect it. I think that when you get to her, like, level of, like, prowess, you can kind of have as disgusting a gamer keyboard as you want, and, like, no one can say anything otherwise. And actually, maybe she realizes that too. She's kind of just like, who the fuck are you to kind of like criticize me for like anything? Like, do you not realize like who I am or like what I've accomplished? And I think about it, I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, who am I to like, criticize you for anything?
She doesn't even have the ego, in my opinion. She just does the damn thing. Yeah.
Do you have any final thoughts on Joyce Carol Oates or even author posting before we close out the show?
I would just add that the inventor of oatmeal tweet reply to her is reason enough to celebrate her Twitter account, because
which one? What one was that?
It was in reply to one of her spicier tweets. This guy replied, "No, that's not it at all. You're so wrong. Thank you for inventing oatmeal, but that's not true."
Oh yeah. Okay. So I'm going to read this out now. So this was in 2014. So Joyce Carol Oates says, though Woody Allen has been much denounced, great way to start a post.
Yeah.
Very likely many of his denouncers greatly admire Nabokov's Lolita. No contradiction? To which a guy called DVS Blast goes, "Dot Joyce Carol Oates. That's not the same at all. That's terrible. You're terrible. But thank you for inventing oatmeal."
And you know what? I think the creativity you see in that reply, that's what she puts out into the world coming back. And I think that's what's magical about her.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you know how like you can tell this is a really old tweet? Like when you look in the replies, there is an account called Favestar. Do you remember Favestar.fm?
Yes.
I miss it every day. Yeah.
It would at you whenever you got like 100 like likes or 250 retweets or whatever. So this reply got a thousand likes, I think, or about over 1,000 likes and like 124 like retweet. Basically, I guess it was like a viral. I guess it was a viral-ish post for 2014.
Oh yeah,
for the time, it did very well.
Yeah,
like the numbers now, you're kind of like, huh, 100 quote tweets. Check out this guy, Conrad Golden. I guess like, so like, I guess my final question just before we close off then is like, what can like writers learn like from Joyce Carol Oates posting, right? Like, I feel like she's got the balance right in a lot of respects. But is she the only one that's kind of capable of doing this kind of posting? Or like, do you kind of think that she just understands how to kind of get the balance right in such a way, but like people will get mad at you online, but not enough to kind of ruin your day?
I think she has an intuitive sense of both creativity and invention coupled with a particular kind of violent sense of pathos. like the skeleton tweet. First of all, like the first thing that it made me think of was, remember last year we talked about the Francis Fukuyama Halloween decoration?
Yes. Poster. Yeah, I was wondering who else did the skeleton tweet.
It's a similar genre. But also, if you place it in the context with someone who's been recently bereaved, it's visceral and it's sad, and it's the kind of visceral and sad that people actually don't want to confront directly. It's the same sort of gut punch that you get from you know, beneath every smile is a skull, as a sort of memento mori kind of sort of mantra. And it's much easier to make fun of her and saying, oh, Boomer doesn't like the Halloween decorations, than actually confronting what she's saying about the brutal, inescapable fact of the bones and people everywhere, of whoever they are, just going to be ending up as bones. And you are bones for so much longer than you are a living, thinking, breathing person. So maybe you are supposed to be bones. Maybe being alive is the aberration. And no one wants to think like that, because if you think like that, you'd never be able to persuade yourself to get anything done. But she doesn't mind thinking like that, and she doesn't mind framing it in absolutely note perfect posters writing. I just think she's extraordinary, and she's excellent, and it's so in keeping with her writing, which is very kind, which is often very brutal and violent and quite sort of gothic in places. And she's interested in alienation and interpersonal violence and rural and working class American poverty. And I just think she's a genius. I just think she's a genius. I think she can post whatever she likes. That's what I think. I think she can have her keyboard however she likes. I think she can post however many weird pictures of her diseased foot. Like, she can do what she likes because she's a genius. We're lucky to have her.
She's a great poster. And I think, yeah, you're right. You're completely right. Miles, do you have any last words on Joyce Carol Oates?
I'm glad she has never apologized for being literary. That's all she's doing.
That's right. It's a thing, but like very few writers can really get anymore. But like, so it's nice to kind of see that like the few who do get to enjoy that, like use that to its full capacity.
And like she says in the foot post, don't go hiking without socks.
That's true.
That's a very helpful post.
I went running the other day. I went running the other day with like no socks, and it was genuinely like the worst like feeling of my entire life. And that was like all like, that's right. And that was all on like flat roads. So like, yeah, you're completely right. Okay, so yeah, we are a pro Joyce Carol Oates show at this point. At this point, we should also end the show because we are running a bit out of time. So Miles, thank you so much for joining us once again. We always love you here, and we're excited for you to come back on to talk more about posting. But if people are hungry for Miles' posts, like how can they find the stuff that you're up to?
You can get me at Miles Klee on Twitter. And then if you go to my Twitter, you'll also see a link at the top to my newsletter called Miles High Club, that comes out every Friday. And it is just a roundup of ridiculous internet nonsense that I pitched at my job at Mel Magazine, but didn't get assigned. And then you can read my Mel posts at melmagazine.com. And those are out every day. So
cool. All those links will be in the show notes if you want to click on them. You can follow us at 10K Post Pod on Twitter. You can follow me at hkizvani on twitter.com. As usual, follow Trash Future. Also, follow, listen to Human Error on BBC Sounds, the show that I do with Olga Koch, which is also about tech and all the problems that it causes. Phoebe, if people want to follow you, how can they do that?
You can request to follow my cat and feet pics account on Twitter at PRHRoy. You can see the public cat and feet pics that I post on Instagram at Phoebe_Rosa_Holly. And you can hear me talking to Milo about feet, cats, and Seinfeld on Masters of Pod.
All that will be in the show notes too. This show is produced by Devon. You can follow them at Devon_on_earth and also listen to their podcast Kill James Bond. That will also be in show notes as well. And finally, this was a free episode, but if you really want bonus content, which you should because it's really good, you should follow you should subscribe to our Patreon, and you can find that at patreon.com/10kpostpodcast. We have a bunch of like very cool episodes with like a lot more really good stuff coming. I would personally recommend it, both as the person who like has a Patreon, but also like, you know, we do fun stuff. This is a fun show, and like, you know, we've had some interesting I think the last Patreon we had was with a really good conversation with the comedian Rajiv Kharia. So listen to that. And then one last thing, we are doing a live show at the Star of Kings in London. This is our first kind of live show. We're doing it with Ryan Broderick and the Content Minds and a bunch of other very cool people as well. That's on November 10th. We have a very special presentation. I think there are some tickets left, so if you would like to go to that, there is also a link in the show notes below. Come meet us. Don't be weird. I might give you like a sign. I might write to do a handwritten post for you if you're very good and not weird. Right, and I think that's it from us. So until next time, we will catch you later. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.